Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to the July 3rd broadcast of Italian Tomatoes. And as usual with our Independence Weekend shows, we'll start with the national anthem. Well, good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to Italian Tomatoes. That was the stirring rendition of the national anthem by Whitney Houston, a very famous rendition done at the time of the first Gulf War, and thought it would be an appropriate way to kick off our Independence Weekend show. The chat is open if you wish to participate in the chat, and if you wish to call into the show, the number is 646-200-4444. That's 646-200-4444. I hope everyone is having an enjoyable holiday weekend. And here in Texas, it's very hot. So I am not sorry to be indoors doing the radio show. Don't know what kind of listenership we will have on the live show on a holiday weekend, but we'll try to make it enjoyable to listen to in archives. I wanted to do a show about the election cycle and the difficulty in understanding what's going on for a lot of people in the Republican Party. This election cycle is bending the boundaries of conventional wisdom. And it's not for the first time. Every 20, 30 years, you get a kind of a game-changing election where the old rules break down and new ones take their place. In this election cycle, as far as the Republican Party is concerned, we have a very unusual situation in which substantial wings of the party really do not like the candidate that is likely to emerge at the convention in a couple of weeks. Movement conservatives don't like Trump because of his unorthodox views, the fact that he certainly isn't a movement conservative, the fact that he has supported Democrats in the past, the fact that he seems to be much friendlier towards certain policies of big government than movement conservatives are. And of course, the establishment Republicans, many of them don't like him either because he's got a very abrasive style. He is opinionated and egotistical. He's a classic CEO, business mogul who is not used to be telling, he does not like to be told what to do. He has a certain ability to express views that are not part of the consensus. He certainly has done that on things like immigration, on national security, on the Iraq War, and other assorted issues. So you have these substantial pieces of the party that really, really do not like him. But then you have the, counter reality that this guy got a record number of votes in the Republican primary. So what is going on? What is going on with the Republican Party? Why are we entering this election cycle with such an unconventional candidate in such an unconventional circumstances? So that's going to be the subject of the show, but let me check chat and the phones, make sure nothing needs attention there. And, okay, looks like that's all under control, so let's get on with it. In my view, politics is as much about getting things done and representing the views and interests of your constituents as political ideology or style and demeanor of the candidate. And I think this election is very close in many ways to what happened in 1952. Dick Morris did a write-up on this, which I will use as part of the presentation here. And back in 1952, the situation was the following. Truman was getting to the end of his second term in office. Now, he achieved many good things during his 8 years in the White House, but his second term definitely gave evidence of the infamous second term slump. Lots of things started to go wrong in his second term. Of course, overriding everything was the quagmire in Korea, where we had been at war by the time the 1952 election rolled around for 2 years with very heavy casualties and no end in sight. During his second term, which began in 1949, we had a series of foreign policy disasters. The communist takeover of Eastern Europe solidified. China fell to the communists, and at that time the communists did tend to act as a unified bloc, and then with very ominous consequences for the future security of the world, the Soviet Union acquired a nuclear weapon, which broke America's monopoly on the technology of the atomic bomb. So just one thing after another was going wrong in terms of global security. Domestically, the government would not let go of the regulatory regime that had developed during the New Deal and especially World War II. And the government kind of still exercised a stranglehold on the private economy, including wage and price controls, which, interestingly, that was the origin of, well, not the origin, but certainly provided an enormous boost to the practice of employers providing health insurance because they could not give wage increases, but they could provide benefit increases without breaking the wage control rules. And that's what many of them increasingly did, was to give employees compensation in the form of benefits, especially health insurance. With all of this regulatory overhang, we still had a lot of shortages in the economy. People were hungry for economic growth after the deprivations of the Depression and World War II, but the economy was not keeping up with the demands that people had. You had a lot of labor unrest, strikes, unions were at their zenith, and there was a lot of controversy as to how to make them subject to the rule of law. So you had economic turmoil on top of everything else. So basically, you had an environment where a lot of things were going wrong and people wanted things fixed. And that is where the whole draft Eisenhower movement came along. I'm just going to check chat again. So the situation politically in 1952 was the conservatives were on the ascendant in the Republican Party. They were hungry for one of their own, and they believed that moderate candidates had blown the elections of 1940, 1944, and 1948. So the conservatives really thought that it was, quote, their turn, unquote. They supported Robert Taft from Ohio for the Republican nomination, but many people in the general public still blamed the conservative wing of the Republican Party for the Depression. So, and the memories of the Depression were still quite lively, even though 20 years had passed since 1932. Many people in the Republican Party machinery did not believe that Taft could win a national election with the kind of positions, the anti-New Deal positions that he held, and the New Deal, despite all of the problems of Truman's second term, was still very popular. So what happened was Taft was edging out the potential moderate candidates like Earl Warren and Harold Stassen, and the Republican moderates and a good deal of the Republican Party establishment were looking for an alternative to Taft because they were very afraid that he would blow the election. And a draft Eisenhower movement arose. They wrote his name in the New Hampshire primary. He won, and it started the ball rolling. And that is how that Eisenhower candidacy achieved momentum. Now, there was a lot of opposition to Eisenhower. It seems odd in retrospect because Eisenhower is now perceived to have been one of the most successful and, in fact, one of the most conservative presidents of the 20th century. But that was not the perception at the time. And Dick Morris wrote a couple of interesting things in his little write-up on the 1952 election, and I'm going to quote those. Eisenhower's victory demonstrated that voters were not so much fed up with liberalism as with all ideology. They no more wanted a doctrinaire conservative than a liberal. Ike's victory was a triumph of nationalism and a victory for someone from outside the political process over a conservative leader within it. Sounds familiar, doesn't it? And then he references the 1952 election in the context of what was going on in 2016. And here's another quote. When Cruz accuses Trump of not being a real conservative, he issues Taft's attacks on Eisenhower, but outside of the Midwestern Republican heartland, it seems many voters do not want a real conservative. They want a nationalist. And that really does describe the situation in 1952. The Republican Party machinery was desperate to win. After all, they had been out of power for 20 years, and they didn't think that Taft could bring the victory. So that was the impetus for the whole draft Eisenhower movement. And, of course, it was very controversial because the Democrats had been after Eisenhower to run in 1948 on their ticket, and Eisenhower had left it open as far as his political future, as to what party he really belonged to. So that has some interesting echoes up to the present day. But the enormous appeal of Eisenhower is something that is just very hard to... Well, the controversy around Eisenhower, I should say, is something very hard to understand in the context of today, where the consensus is that he was very successful as president. Back in the day, he embodied a real split within the Republican Party, and it was his non-political attributes that captured the day and persuaded people that this is the guy that we want for the Republicans to run because we want change, we want it now, and we want a proven decision maker who seems to offer the potential for making that change. So I'm going to play a couple of clips, one about Eisenhower's background as a soldier, and this comes from Dick Morris, soldier and diplomat. And then the other is a historical clip about the 1952 Republican Convention, which I think for those who've been following the race of 2016, it will make you believe in reincarnation. It really struck me when I listened to it for the first time. But first, here's Dick Morris on the Eisenhower apolitical appeal. Clip is having some trouble loading. Brother. The joys of Blog Talk Radio production. Are we going to get a clip or not? Sign of life. Ah, the good old shockwave flash crashed. Get it reloaded. Shockwave flash has got to be one of the most terrible applications ever devised to screw up your computer. Okay, here we go. Coming back.
Today's history video, I'd like to talk a bit about Dwight D. Eisenhower as a general. Many people, I think, underestimate his military ability because they look at him in the sense of a general, in the sense of Robert E. Lee, a general who maneuvers his forces, moves them around. Does flank attacks and stuff like that. That was much more General MacArthur, who we'll talk about in a few weeks. Eisenhower was the first diplomat general, the first general who basically realized that in modern warfare, you have got to have coalitions. You've got to hold the coalitions together, have them work together, integrate them, see. And that the real threat is not so much from the enemy as that your own coalition will spin apart and work at cross purposes with each other. He had a very difficult job to meld the British and the American forces that fought in World War II. On the one hand, there was a power that was fading from the scene, Britain, but still anxious to protect its prestige and its empire back then. It still had an empire in World War II. And the United States, that was the coming nation. And as an American, he was particularly conflicted because he had to deal both with his own nationals, who he'd grown up with and served with at West Point and in the Army, and sometimes put them down and elevate the generals from Britain, the other country. The other problem was not just egos. It was a fundamental difference in war aims between Churchill and Roosevelt. Roosevelt's view was that the most important thing was to defeat the Nazis and to defeat the Japanese, and that we should adopt the shortest, direct, most direct route possible. Churchill was much more concerned about the post-war balance of power and was concerned about stopping Russia from occupying all of Eastern Europe. From that point of view, Churchill wanted a dash to Berlin so that Berlin and Germany would clearly be occupied by the West, not by the Russians. And he favored meeting the Russian army much, much further over to the east than the occupation zone specified. Eisenhower went ahead and met the Russians much farther east, 200 or 300 miles beyond the demarcation line that had been negotiated at the Yalta Agreement, but then pulled back to the occupation line and let the Russians occupy their territory. It was not only a fundamental difference in outlook, in tradition, and in the whole notion of what the war was about. Eisenhower also had to deal with the personalities of his generals. Montgomery wanted to be totally in charge, and Patton, of course, wanted to be in charge. Eisenhower had a lifelong friendship with Patton and really single-handedly saved Patton's career on many an occasion. But yet he had to put Montgomery in overall charge of the land war because he was Montgomery and because the British needed to have that concession. And then on top of that, he had to deal with the Russians, both in terms of the issue of allocation, of how much material should we send Russia in lend-lease to keep her in the war and help her win, and how much should go to the American forces. Beefing up for the D-Day invasion, and dealing with the Russians on all kinds of diplomatic levels. So Eisenhower, in a real sense, served in World War II as the assistant president, much more than the commanding general. And it was a fascinating role and one that he pioneered and handled very, very well. Thanks for watching.
Okay. Well, I'm sorry for the choppy nature of that clip. I mean, that's what you get when you have a shockwave flash program hit your platform in the middle of a broadcast. But I think you're able to get the gist of that. And now I'm reloading everything because it crashed on all of my other open windows. I just love Shockwave Flash. It is so wonderful. So anyway, I mean, what you see there with Eisenhower, he navigated all of these different things. The problems of dealing with foreign governments, the enormous logistical problems of the war effort, the enormous military decisions that had to be made, especially the D-Day invasion itself, whether you launch it or whether you don't launch it. And so basically, he had established his cred as a decision maker, and that's what the people were looking for. They needed somebody to make decisions in the presidency. As we went into this complicated period, where so many things were going wrong and so many things had to be fixed, and that really was the momentum behind the very, very unconventional choice to go with Dwight D. Eisenhower as president, as a presidential candidate, somebody who had no close association with the Republican Party, who could easily have run as a Democrat, who in fact accepted a number of the principles of the New Deal, somebody who was looked at very suspiciously by orthodox conservative Republicans. Well, the party had to make its choice, and it went with the unconventional choice, and the rest, of course, is history. Now, whether it went down well with the people who lost, who were supporting Taft? No, it did not go down well. The controversy was smoldering right up to and including the Republican convention itself. And I'm going to play a clip related to the convention to drive that part home, because the outcome of the convention was very much in doubt until the convention was over. So here is a newsreel clip of the time about the Republican convention of 1952, and this is very interesting as well.
At Chicago, the battle for the Republican candidature is underway as Senator Taft is noisily championed by his supporters for the presidential election in November. In his hotel, Mr. Eisenhower goes into conference with Stassen of Minnesota, who, together with California's Governor Warren, is willing to sacrifice his own chance of election to back Ike. Then in the convention hall, events take a dramatic turn, as our American commentator reports.
Floor, state delegations are grouped together like troops drawn up for battle. Massachusetts forces are headed by Senator Saltonstall. New York's delegation is led by Governor Dewey, an Eisenhower supporter, while Pennsylvania's important delegation is headed by Governor Fine and Senator Duff. Then the crowd comes to order as party chairman Gabrielson officially opens the convention. The Taft-Ike battle breaks out at once. Washington's Governor Langley proposing a rule change that establishes the Eisenhower position. Then Taft's supporter, Clarence Brown, proposes an amendment to the Langley proposal. Now, in this first test of strength, both sides marshal their forces for the voting. A no vote means a victory for Eisenhower.
Pennsylvania, yes, 13. No, 57.
The results announced. The Ike men win.
The vote on the Brown Amendment is 548, yes, 658, no.
Then General of the Army Douglas MacArthur, who has been a supporter of the candidacy of Senator Taft, is welcomed to the rostrum to make the keynote speech of the convention. MacArthur delivers a vigorous indictment of Democratic policy.
Perhaps it is unnecessary here to indict the present administration for all of its tragic blunders, for that indictment has already found full expression in the resentments which have poured from the hearts of the American people from north to south, east to west, with no distinction of race, creed, color, or political affiliation.
Though MacArthur failed to save Taft, it's just possible he himself might be elected. But as we go to press, experts say that Ike has again crossed the Rhine in strength, and victory lies ahead.
Okay, well, as you can see, the Republican convention in 1952 was dominated by a furious fight over a rule change. Now, doesn't that sound familiar? So, you know, it's so funny, the cyclicality of politics, and people who've been following the race in 2016 know that there has been a lot of plotting to change rules at the 2016 Republican convention in an effort to release delegates from their commitment to vote for the winner of the primary in their state and to vote their conscience and to then, you know, not vote for Trump, but to vote for somebody else, but we don't know who the somebody else is. And very interesting stuff. I have another caller. Let me see who that is. I think this is on Skype. So, caller, who are you?
Thank you very much for taking my call. Can you hear me loud and clear?
Yes, I can hear you.
Okay. I mean, so if I'm not mistaken, you are pro-Trump, right?
Yes. Well, yes. I mean, essentially pro-Trump. He was not my first choice in this going into the primary season, but he is going to be the nominee, and I am supporting him, yes.
Right. First of all, Hillary Clinton, you know, she dresses like a Muslim woman. Have you noticed that? She dressed up from head to the toe covered. First of all, we don't like this kind of, you know, lady dress at all, and yet if she is dressing like a hijab or veil or, you know, it's like a black bird, basically, you know, only she shows her hair. Is she going to put a scarf next time on her hair too? What a disgrace to the mankind this lady is. I mean, if she submits, she supports Sharia law, she supports, you know, Islamic law for this great land. So that's rubbish. This lady should be dressed like better than that. I mean, if she wants to show...
Nicole, I'm not here to, you know, discuss Hillary's style choices. I think there are issues. I think Hillary Clinton would not be a good choice as far as protecting the national security of the United States, and that goes far beyond how, you know, she dresses in public.
I know. That's true. But one of the things is also her dress sucks, really. It's like she dressed like a diva. And she is a liar. She is, you know, she knows so much thing about Obama administration that this lady is untouchable so far, I think. And, you know, last week, Bill saw the head of the, you know, Homeland Security and talked to her. And they said, well, we talk about kids and et cetera. That's bullshit to us. And we know what Bill,
I mean, there has been so much criticism of that meeting and the whole conduct of Hillary Clinton as far as compliance with the law is going to be such a big issue in the presidential campaign. Now, obviously, I think Obama, the team Obama, has been trying to shield her, but the scope of her disregard of, I think, both her responsibilities as Secretary of State and her duty to comply with the law, the scope of that is so enormous that I don't think it can be shoved under the rug, and it will definitely be an issue in the election, and people will have to make up their minds.
Exactly, indeed. I mean, I don't know about the Donald Trump, my friend. I mean, Donald Trump talks very good, talks very appealing, but I don't know how much he can do if he becomes a president of the United States. Do you have an answer for that, my friend?
Yeah, I mean, any political candidate is a risk. Donald Trump is not perfect. There are a lot of things that I have reservations about. There are a lot of things that he's done that I approve of. He has enormous courage politically in defying political correctness and the conventional wisdom. He has no political experience. That is a drawback. I mean, every candidate is a risk. but like every election, it's choose. You have to choose. And the reason why I'm doing this show is that there are some people in the Republican Party who just can't get over the fact that their preferred candidate did not win, as in fact happened to me, and they have to choose between someone that they don't like, which is Trump, and somebody that they should avoid like the plague, which is Hillary Clinton, and they don't want to make that choice. They just continue to complain about Trump and say, we're not supporting him, but that doesn't mean that we're supporting Hillary. And in my view, that's nonsense.
Mm-hmm.
You have a clear choice. It's one or the other. My advice to them is they need to stop deceiving themselves and make their choice.
My question is to you, when you have a sham elections, rag elections, and you know your vote will not be counted anyway, and I say, why do we have to vote for? I call for massive boycott of elections. Go ahead, please.
Well, I mean, there is a school. I mean, I've heard that argument before, and, obviously everybody has to make that decision for themselves. You know, my view always is, as far as elections is concerned, is that if you think there is a definite difference between the two candidates, even though you don't like one of them very much, but you think they are on balance better than the alternative, then you should go and vote. Now, there are some people that say that, well, all elections are fixed. It doesn't really make a difference who you
That's
vote.
That's true.
The outcome.
Because Bilderberg meeting and CFR and et cetera, they make decisions for the whole globe. They know who's going to be president of Turkey, who's going to be president of the United States of America, who's going to be president of Prime Minister of Canada, et cetera. So, you know, and it's mind-boggling, you know. And then if your vote doesn't count, then is useless in any state, country.
And I think, here you get into a question of degree because, I mean, there is no denying that there are transnational bodies that exercise a lot of influence over the politics of each country, and they are really not accountable to anybody. But they don't always get their way, as we just have seen in the British referendum on staying in the European Union. Now, my own view with respect to the presidential election is that everything that I see about Hillary Clinton tells me that she is going to be very subject to being influenced by what you would call maybe the globalist movement, the big investment banks, the big multinational corporations, that type of thing. And she's got a foundation that operates in all of these different companies, you know, trading influence, cutting deals, all of that stuff, taking money. And then you have Donald Trump, who, you know, does business overseas, but in terms of his kind of persona and background is much more of a nationalist than a globalist. Now, is he going to satisfy nationalist impulses every decision he makes? No, he's not going to. He will do things that people, including me, are not going to like. But again, it's a question of the choice. If there is a distinct difference between the two, and I think there is, who do you go with? And in my view, I'm voting for Donald Trump this November.
Yes.
Without any hesitation, even though he was not my first choice to be the candidate.
But always they give us very bad choices, and we always have to go vote between two murderers and killers. I mean, what the hell is that? Is this going
to
elections?
No, you know, I've had this discussion many times on another show called where I was a guest on. It's a Second Amendment firearm show called Free Fire Friday. And the host of that show, I've had many discussions with him on that subject. And it's true. I mean, you many elections, you are voting for the, quote, the lesser of two evils, unquote.
Right.
But
that's the
kind of life.
I mean, always.
Yeah, you know,
I mean,
I mean, this is a decision everybody has to make for themselves. Do you want to make a statement and just stay home? I understand the logic behind that. Or if you do believe that there is a choice, one of which is better than the other, although very flawed, do you go and exercise your vote to, you know, bring about that choice? And, you know, I'm in the pragmatist camp.
Right.
I mean, okay.
I go and vote for Donald Trump, but my vote is stolen and goes for Hillary. So what the hell am I voting for?
Well, I mean,
you see, physically,
the whole
I know,
thing
I
about
vote.
Voter
you
fraud and things like that. Right. I mean, that is a real risk in the political system that we've got now, and I don't have a ready answer to that. But that's still not.
All of them are Microsoft based. All the software on Microsoft base is easy to hack, easy
right.
to manipulate.
I mean, there are ways of corrupting any voting system, and those efforts will be being made in full force this November. Both actual vote tampering, vote fraud, and more likely attempts by the major media to manipulate stories to produce anti-Trump momentum and pro-Hillary momentum. I think all of that is a given. But the only thing that you can do is to do what you can to get out and make your views heard. And in my view, the best way of doing it
is stay home.
Show up and vote.
You choose to stay home. Or you choose to stay home.
So, If you refuse to vote, the practical effect of that is that any voter who would prefer Trump over Hillary, if that voter stays home, that is just increasing the size of Hillary's margin. And the fact that they stayed home is going to have very little impact on public opinion. And in fact, it's going to do the reverse. It's going to increase legitimacy of a Hillary victory because people will say, oh, well, look at Hillary. She won with 60% of the vote. It's the people really
but
support
60%
her.
Of what kind of vote? Maybe 1 million votes instead of 200 million? You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Then
Yeah. Again, like I said, there is no definitive answer to this. We all have to make
right.
the decision that we're comfortable with in terms of our values. But just to reaffirm my position, I think it's important to vote. I think you should vote if you think there is a practical difference between the two candidates. You have to vote for
right.
who you think will produce the better outcome for the country. And there is no question in my mind that in this election, Trump will produce the better outcome. It will not be a perfect outcome. I don't know if he can win. But I have
a practical decision to make,
and I'm making it.
When globalists, they tell you who's going to be your next president, prime minister, etc. Of course, you're right in that regard. I mean, with all hope, I mean, best regard, you say Bernie Sanders or Donald Trump or whoever. But, you know, we already, I mean, I'm not trying to be bad, negative. But, you know, is already decision made prior. Who's going to be whose? And that's ridiculous.
Clearly there are people out there with a lot of influence and global connections, if you will, who have a lot of influence and who are going to sway the outcome. But that doesn't mean the system is totally rigged. Like I said, they did the same thing in the British referendum and they did not get their way. And if enough people stand firm in the United States, they won't get their way in this election cycle either. Now, let's say that people who think like me are successful and Trump gets in. Is he going to be perfect, satisfy every one of my, you know, political desires? Is he going to make deals that I wish he hadn't made with some of these global decision makers? Yeah, that is going to happen. I'm very realistic when it comes to politics. But I still think, on balance, he may be imperfect. He may cut deals that I wish he didn't cut. He will be much more responsive to the desire of the American people and their interests for national security, secure borders, and a revived economy than Hillary Clinton is going to be, and that's why I'm voting for him, and I'm encouraging people within the Republican Party to forget all of the divisiveness of the primaries and concentrate on the general election.
So what do you think of these high tensions between the, say, Donald Trump supporters and Hillary and vice versa, and, you know, people calling for civil unrest in the United States of America? What do you think of that, please?
Well, I think that we have still a responsive, not perfect, but a responsive electoral system in this country. And people need to forget about that kind of rhetoric and focus on the elections. That's, the system is still working. We need to work within it. That's my view of it. People who are saying, there's no hope, the system is just broken down irretrievably. I don't agree with that. I just don't agree with it. The system is certainly imperfect. Don't I know? But I think we need to just focus on the task at hand. If it really ever does break down beyond repair, then we all have to make decisions at that point. That we are far from that situation right now.
But isn't that true that their model is divide and conquer? They divide us and then they rule on us is their model. They bring us this unity.
Absolutely. To the degree that's possible, all the American voters should go across the water and look at what happened in Great Britain during their referendum, because the establishment was out in force with all of its tricks, the fear-mongering, the manipulation, the predictions of disaster if Britain were to separate from the European Union. They tried every trick in the book to sway public opinion. And that will occur this November as well. But they don't always get their way. And that is kind of where I'm hanging my hopes, that if people follow their own conscience and their own common sense and they look at what's going on around them, they will tell the media and the globalists and the liberals, progressives in the Democratic Party, we're not buying it. You had your chance. The country has got
a lot of problems. It's not working right. We want it fixed. And we're going to take a chance on this guy who hopefully can fix it. And if he doesn't fix it, we'll get rid of him too.
Right. The question is, will America survive? That's the question mark.
Well, yeah, I certainly hope so. I think it will. I mean, I can't predict the future, but, my view on that is we have to do our part to make it survive. And beyond that, there is nothing that we can do. You can only do what you can do. The country's survival has been at risk many times in the past. We've come through it. I hope we'll come through it again. But that, the fact that there is no guarantee does not relieve us of the responsibility of working for the outcome that we think is best for the country. There's nothing more that we can do. We have to do what we can do. If you wait for a guarantee, nothing will ever get done, and we will lose it. So, risk is a part of life too.
Yes, I understand. Thank you very much for allowing me to speak in your show.
Okay, well, very good. If you ever,
I hope more people listen to your show as well, too.
Okay, well, thanks for calling. And we're on every couple of weeks, so, check us out. And if you want to call in again, you're certainly welcome to do that.
Sure. I appreciate you. Thank you very much.
All right, very good. You have a great day.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Well, that was interesting. I always like these to vote or not to vote discussions, and I've had many of them, like I've said, on another show with Free Fire Friday with the host of that show. We're almost at the end of our allotted hour, and I do want to wrap up the points that I was trying to make, which is why did the voters in this Republican primary cycle go with this unconventional choice of Donald Trump. And just to conclude, I think the 1952 election is a good illustration of the same phenomenon. The public is not happy with the way things are going. People want things fixed. The noise level of all of the Obama policy failures, whether it's Obamacare, the stagnant economy, the rise of ISIS, the collapse of the global security structure in the face of ISIS, the rise of terrorism in the United States. We went from, after 9/11, we went from 2001 to 2008 with no terrorist incidents on our soil. Now we've had way too many of them, and we are likely to have more. The noise is becoming impossible to ignore, and the noise is the country is not working, it is failing. And so just to drive that point home, I'm in a kind of humorous way, I'm going to play a classic commercial from the early 1970s. It's the Midas muffler commercial. The commercial starts with a guy with a noisy car because his muffler's not working, a beautiful lady in a fancy sports car pulls up next to him. He starts to ogle her, and this is what he finds out.
I haven't had the time. Man, you are a menace to society.
It
Midas, usually we take only 30 minutes to install a muffler. So why put up with all that noise?
Well, we've got the same problem. We've got a noisy, obnoxious government that needs to be fixed. And it's not even a 30-minute fix. It takes 5 minutes to vote. You can do something about it, so go and do what you know that you have to do. And on that note, I'm going to close the show. I hope everybody has a safe and enjoyable holiday weekend. Take some time to enjoy the wonderful country that we have, and I'm going to go out with an optimistic piece of music. And once again, have a wonderful 4th of July, and thanks for listening. Have a great weekend. Goodbye.